dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Drew is rocking shorts that Dusty can't take his eyes off of, actually.
Apparently not, I know.
The shorts have Pacers spelled out across them, and Dusty is fascinated by them. It's like all morning long. I don't know if he talked about during Fesco and Dusty or not, but Dusty is very aware of the
Where's
spacing
the
of the lettering.
Where's the C in Pacers, Gold?
It's on his shorts.
Right on
middle.
Drew's C.
Okay. Okay.
Can I say something without offending you, Drew?
Pacers
color.
I want to hear this.
The Pacers color
Go
scheme.
Ahead. Go ahead.
The Pacers color scheme stinks.
Oh,
it's awful.
I thought you were going to say something way worse than that.
It's awful. shorts.
Nobody agrees with you.
Those shorts by context are hideous. Because their color
but
scheme
they're retro.
Stinks.
Those are like retro shorts, aren't they?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
these
I mean, it's
the
very, those look like very 1999 shorts, but that's what you were going for. I get it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, these are the Flojos. This is the, yeah. And Dusty says they're definitely flowing. Yeah,
you've been holding on to those for a while. They've made it in the closet
you
for
even
a while.
Said you, didn't have much, you said you didn't have much Pacers gear, but today's definitely the day to rock them.
I remember shorts, and yeah, definitely the day to rock it after what we saw last night.
Yeah, we'll get to that at some point here in the first 30 minutes or so of the show. I got to talk about how that went down at the Garden last night. Epic basketball game. Obviously, an unbelievable shot from Halliburton. Thought he won it right there. They got it done in overtime, though. We'll get to that in just a bit. We're also about a half hour away from being joined by Jim Callis from MLB Network. He does a great job with their baseball prospect coverage, MLB Pipeline. We want to talk about CAGs with Jib, and we also want to talk about just where the development is at within the Royals organization. CAGs has, of course, only played two games in AAA, but want to get Jim's perspective on what he makes of J.J. Piccolo's comp to Pete Alonso when J.J. joined us earlier on this week.
Already hitting .333 in AAA,
That's true.
That's better than he hit in AA, Cole. Yeah. He only hit .323 in AA.
True.
Although the power, you know, got to be concerned those 2 days. No doubles or triples, only three singles.
People are asking specifically, where does it say Pacers? No, it's on the front of the shorts, guys. On the front of the shorts.
Yes, it is on the front of the shorts.
Not the rear. People were asking if
I
Dusty was...
I thought you were
was,
wearing, like, juicy sweats.
Yeah, people wondering if Dusty was staring at your ass. I said no.
No, yeah, they're not on the behind, no.
Oh, okay.
No, they're not.
Gotcha.
Behind, that... Honestly, when you say
Gold
does this every once, but like when people say stuff like that, it makes us all more uncomfortable.
I said ass.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
But like on the behind. Oh, I hate it so much worse.
If Drew Short spelled out Pacers on his rear, that would have been really weird.
See, I don't like rear either.
Oh, well, rear's
just
not
say it normal. Ever just say like.
But?
Yes, that's way better. Wait, when we say rear and behind, everyone seems like creepy old men. Like I just like, oh, the vibe is bad. Maybe it's just me.
Oh my gosh.
I just don't like it.
Okay.
By the way, Just Don mesh shorts is what they're called. Just Don. They got other teams other than just the Pacers.
There you go. Yes. You can check out the show on video if you would like. Drew might move his camera. I don't know.
Subscribe. We're just going to have a camera shot on his shorts.
I don't know if we want that. It's that might be a little awkward for everybody involved. Anyway, you can watch the show, as I said, on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the show. You can also text in 913-586-7965 on the Jays Southland Tow Service text line. But let's start with the Royals. That's why we were off the air a little bit early yesterday at 1:30 because they had an afternoon game against the Giants. And going into that one, hey, it was a bullpen game. Your offense was struggling. You're going up against Logan Webb, who has been very, very good for the Giants. So baseball happened yesterday. Of course, it ended up being one of the best offensive performances of the entire season for the
Against
Royals.
One of the guys who's been one of the best starting pitchers in the National League. Yeah,
everybody in the lineup. Duh. Everybody in the lineup got a hit. Salvador Perez
had 12 hits, but like the fifth hit.
Yeah, Salvador Perez had 3 hits. We were just talking about him yesterday. Do I think everything is fixed after one game? No, but it's a good sign, hopefully.
And a homer.
And he hit a home run after we said he hadn't hit one, which he hadn't since early April. So hopefully with an off day today, you're feeling good heading into a big series against the Twins tomorrow. But that yesterday was, it was so nice to finally have kind of a stress-free game. By the time it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or 2:30, I guess, or I guess the game started at 2:45. So yeah, 3:30 in the afternoon, the Royals were not in a nail biter, 1-0, 2-1, 3-2. No, you could relax. Even late in the game when they gave up a couple home runs, Urseg gave up a few runs.
Great time to have your worst day, yeah. Urseg.
Yeah, they were able to just coast, if you will, to the finish there and get a series win against the Giants. A good team, by the way, that was playing really good baseball heading in.
I mean, look, the way I view the game last night is the way I view the one, what, a week ago, 2 weeks ago? Can you just turn this into a week's worth of offense? All I'm asking is that tomorrow night when they face the Twins, it's not some 3-2, 2-1, 1-0 game,
yeah,
like every other time that we've kind of gone through this. But the idea that they were up against a legitimate number one, number two starter in Major League Baseball who'd been great all year, and they hammered him? Yeah, felt pretty good about that. Now, maybe it's just like he didn't have it, because it wasn't just like one guy or two guys. They hit him from jump, immediately got hits, walks, got on base, got runs. Felt like they left guys on. Felt like they could have scored 10 more runs in that game based on the way the first three innings went. Salvador Perez was easily the biggest thing out of there. Salvador Perez getting three hits and getting his, because we hammered it yesterday, first home run since April 13th.
It was opposite field.
Five full weeks getting his first home run. That felt significant. And then yet I come out of that game asking the same questions. They did all that, and Jonathan India wasn't even at the top of the order.
Wasn't in the lineup.
So then I get back into the thing, and I'm like, you know, God, should Michael be hitting first? What if they just switched Michael for India? And Michael hit first, and India hit fifth. Would it make more sense? And then I start going through all the options, because then you could say, would it be that bad if Bobby hit third? How many less at-bats would I be getting if I got India and Michael getting on base before Vinny and before Bobby, and then that way Salvi's pushed further down, but then Salvi gets three hits and you're like, I'm just rearranging the order, trying to figure out 1,000 ways to get more runs or to get runs like they did in that game. This is a really small thing, and I just want to point it out. Daniel Lynch has done anything they've asked him to do in the bullpen. I'm not saying it went super clean yesterday. He didn't give up a run in 1 2/3. He had to start randomly, had to go out there, and you know, he did the job. You know, he did the job he was asked to do, I guess, is the way I view it. And so, like, that was one of the better games they've had all year, I guess.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, offensively it was, there's no question. And to win a bullpen game always is a huge, huge win to get, you know, anytime you're going to rely on your bullpen. And then to couple it with the fact your opposing pitcher had been very, very good all year. I mean, it could have been one of those really frustrating days to watch where your bullpen, just you're asking too much. And then you were the team on the opposite end of what happened yesterday, but it wasn't. It was nice to be on that side of it, and the Royals, of course, are off today, and then they get going, as I said, against Minnesota. I think for the lineup point you were making, I'm sure internally they probably had all those discussions. Like, would we be better? I'm sure they've probably looked at different ways to maneuver the lineup. I'm sure they've gone through a million different options. Michael, it's weird because he's a different player this year. Duh. Last year he had a chance to lead off. And the reason why they went out and acquired Jonathan India, one of the reasons, was because they didn't have a leadoff hitter.
Because so they tried it with Michael last year. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I get it. Michael's
he
numbers,
seems like a different player, though.
His numbers are so different, and he's getting on base more. Everything's different about him this year. So maybe last year was last year. But that would be my only hesitation. Like, hey, you tried him in a leadoff spot. You know, do you want to mess with that? As long as, you know, is he going to have the same approach if he's hitting leadoff as he is right now batting fifth? You know, we did talk just yesterday about, do you move Salvi down? You move him up just a single spot. These are all things that I think at some point could end up happening. Yesterday was just kind of a almost scheduled day off for India, just based off the pitching matchup and everything. I don't think anybody needs to read into that or anything. He'll be back in the lineup tomorrow night. He'll be leading off tomorrow night, I would assume.
Most likely, yeah. I don't see any reason. And look, I pointed out, Jonathan India, you might, as a Royals fan, think it's been a little underwhelming. With Jonathan India, it's not even like a knock. He has been mostly what he is, like maybe a little below the average numbers we talked about. The power numbers are really what stands out. But from a batting average and on-base perspective, he's a little below his career numbers or a little below what he's done historically, but not like comically below what he's done historically. He's more in the range than you think in that category. I'm just like, more it's just like Bobby and Vinny. And I saw the stat from Vinny last night, which was actually kind of surprising. Denny has left the most runners on base in all of baseball. And Vinny was one of the best hitters in all of baseball with runners in scoring position last year. So it's not to say that there haven't been enough guys on base in front of Vinny. But it's like, as much as Mikel's getting on, we could actually increase that number. And if he becomes the run producer he was last year, or Salvi goes through one of these classic Salvi hot streaks, which we've been waiting for 5 weeks, and I hope that this is the sign that he's getting in there, they might be able to produce some runs over the next couple of weeks. And they still do have, what, 10 days before they get Lugo and Reagan's back? So, like, they are going to still, in my opinion, produce more runs while they wait on that.
Yeah, look, I'm not anti-moving Garcia up to the top spot, but I'll push back. Like, someone texted in saying, Garcia's hitting 450 leading off. He should bat one. Yeah, and how many games this year is he leading off, though? Like, I understand the point. Like, if you're going to cite me the, I don't know how many, has he let off 10 games this year, 5 games this year? I don't know, honestly.
I don't know. It's a very small number.
It's not 20. I know that. So, point being, if you're going to cite me that he's hitting 450 this year in 5 games, well, then I can cite you the 50 last year where he let off or whatever. Like,
might have been more than that. Yeah.
He let off for a while. 100. Yeah. So, I hear you. We're all agreement. He's playing great this year. He looks like a different player, but I don't know if we want to cite, like, his leadoff numbers this year acting like that. That's the end all be all.
No, but it does. I will say, because like that, this is the toughest part is I legitimately feel like he's let off 6 times this year. Yeah, I'll give you the numbers in a
very
minute,
small sample size.
I legitimately think he looks like a different player than last year. He looks like a more confident player. And that wouldn't be weird for a 25-year-old player. 25-year-old players can figure it out. Things can snap together. But the Royals, as an organization, had decided to protect themselves a little bit and said, well, you know what? He's not a leadoff hitter right now. We need a guy who's been a leadoff hitter in the bigs for a while as that kind of player. And they wanted a more established guy to do it. And so I was having a hard time. So last year, he hit leadoff for 107 games for the Royals.
All right.
234 average, 280 on base. This year, he has hit leadoff for the Royals for 6 games, and he's hitting 478. I don't think he'd hit 478 if he hit leadoff all the time.
No, nobody, even the text. And I know the texter's not trying to say that.
No. The biggest difference is whether or not you think that Mikel Garcia has hit a career, has figured it out. And then whatever happened last year should be erased out of your memory, out of existence, doesn't matter. And he is getting ready to just be a different player moving forward. And if that's the case, well, then yeah, sure. You got the argument for should he, shouldn't he, which one makes sense, all that stuff. It does make, I'm not saying the Royals have to do it today. I'm saying I would continue to tinker. The problem is you and I both know that whatever they are now is nowhere what I think their lineup will look like September 1st, October 1st, playoff, August 1st, maybe even. I think Jack Caglione by September could be in this lineup. I think whatever bat they trade for could be in this lineup. So, like, depending on which guys they get in there, depending on the bat they trade for, all of this could shift. And Mikel Garcia, in fairness, versus Jonathan India, there is a part of a career that I still think, and I think you agree, Mikel still has to prove it in a longer stretch. Like, I appreciate what he's done. He's done great. And it's not that. But, like, you got to prove it to me a little bit longer. Jonathan India's career is a 260 hitter with a 350 on base. You and your career are a 260 hitter with a 310 on base. You've played a similar number of games, maybe a little bit less for Mikel, but, you know, like, just prove it to me in the long haul. That's all. Coming
up in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Jim Callis from MLB Network, MLB Pipeline, talk more about the Royals farm system, and specifically Jack Caglione, who just had his second game in AAA yesterday. And as Cody joked, he is now hitting 333. That's a fact. 333. Huge sample size in
AAA. Massive, you know?
Massive sample
size.
All
9 at-bats.
So we'll get to that in just a bit. But yesterday afternoon, Kansas Jayhawks made an announcement that Jacque Vaughn is now a new member of the coaching staff. He's their assistant coach. We all know Norm Roberts retired, stepped away from the program after being an assistant with Bill Self for quite some time. Jacque Vaughn, we all know he's a former All-American. His jersey number is hanging up in the rafters there at Allen Fieldhouse. He coached 2 different teams in the NBA. So you bring a guy in who's been an NBA coach for 5-6-ish seasons, and he is now the first ever former NBA head coach to join a KU coaching staff. So in the immediate, in the short term, You know, you love the connection to the NBA. We'll see how he handles through NIL and recruiting. But if you're a young prospect or a high school kid or a guy in the transfer portal, now you have someone that is coached at the NBA level. I think that is very attractive, and it's a huge get for KU. What I think is even more interesting, though, is this the start of a potential plan over the next, I don't know, 2 to 5 years, let's call it, if Bill Self decides to retire? I think he's made it very clear. He's never going to be the guy that's coaching until he's 65, 70 years old. Okay. That's not,
he's openly said as much. Yeah.
So we're on the back end here of his time as a head coach in college basketball. If you're Jock Vaughn, is that part of the intrigue that you take this? You're coaching at the college level after being at the NBA level. Is part of the intrigue, find out if you like college basketball. Can you handle and stomach this NIL thing? Can you navigate the transfer portal and put yourself in a position as a prime candidate? And I'll just use for hypothetical sake, 4 years from now, if that's when Bill Self were to retire. I think it's easy to say right now that could be an option. But who's the hot name in 4 years? I don't know. And where is KU's basketball program? Where is the KU basketball program at in 4 years from now? But it's a very intriguing hire. And yeah, I think he has a potential, if everything went perfect for him, that he could be one of the strong candidates in a couple years.
So just on initial paper, you and I had both said this, and I think we, and you said it here again now, which is they had to make some changes. I thought they needed to get younger in the assistant game. But look, it can add.
Yeah, and he's 50.
Yeah,
but Norm Roberts was 59. It's not like it's a huge difference.
No. So like normally I would be maybe a little nitpicky about that. But if you can add a former NBA head coach as an assistant.
Huge get.
You do it. A former Kansas Jayhawk player, NBA assistant coach. This is an easy hire. I would have been all over this if I was Bill Self. Typically, I would have said I'd have gone younger. But in this case, come on. This is inarguable. You cannot do better in the assistant coach hiring game than he just added in Jock Vaughn. Kansas is way too important of a brand and a legacy as a college basketball program to promise Jock Vaughn the job. I know that sounds crazy.
And nobody's saying they promised him anything.
But like, coach in waiting or any of this stuff. And they haven't done that yet. But my fear is that they're kind of setting it up that way. Yeah. And I would just tell you, I don't care if it's 2 years from now, 3 years from now, a year from now, 5 years from now, it should be an open hiring process. You should treat him like any other candidate. I don't care that he's an all-time Kansas great. I don't care that he's a former NBA head coach. That makes him a pretty damn strong candidate. No doubt about it. But when you're Kansas, you should open up your world to anyone who is in college basketball. Hell, when you're at Kansas, you can steal other power programs, coaches. You can steal everybody but like Dukes, right? Like there's maybe like three programs whose coach you can't take. Anyone else in the country you get your pick from in the college basketball rate. Anyone else who you like in the assistant, like all of that stuff. So like that part is a bit weird because it feels a little bit like if this were any other program, man, I'd say this is the setup to just give Jock Vaughn the job.
Well, I think it could be the start of putting a plan in motion, but a lot has to happen. One, I think if you're Jock Vaughn, too, you have to find, does this right for you? Is the college level right for you? I think in the immediate, him navigating the transfer portal NIL, this should be a huge win. And if he's good at it, though, I think people's opinion could change in 4 years. You know, like if he clearly has success and is a huge asset, and I think he will be, then people's opinion will change. I mean, it's not that long ago. I don't know, within the last 10 years, everybody always thought, oh, Danny Manning's going to be the next head coach.
And I hated that too.
Right. And things that look how much has changed since then. Yeah. Unfortunately for Danny Manning, I don't believe he's coaching anywhere right now. Right. Maybe he's an assistant somewhere. Maybe he's an assistant somewhere. But he, of course, was a head coach at Wake Forest. Then everybody's like, well, it's Tad Boyle. It's Tad Boyle out of Colorado. And Tad Boyle's been in Colorado forever and has had some good years, some bad years off and on. Right. And it's a tough place, I think, to win. But point being, that's what everybody thought was the plan.
And there was always coach of Colorado.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, and then there was
Danny Manning.
And then there was always like Mark Turgeon will come back to Kansas. You know, so there's been names over the years. Now the difference this time around is we know we're on the end of the road, if you will, for Bill Self. He's not coaching 10 years from now. Within the next 10 years, they will have another head coach. I think it's very fair to say right now. So that's why this seems a little different this go around. But let's just see how it plays out. And I'm with you that who's the other hot name? Let's say it's 4 years from now at the same time. And then you can compare the two. But I think we'll know over the next 2 years, roughly, if Jock Vaughn from an assistant level is kicking ass basically and is on the recruiting trail and he's navigating the transfer portal and the player development and all that, we're going to get an answer over the next few years.
Is some of this him just finding out if he'd like to coach in college?
I think that's part
of
it.
If he would like being a college basketball coach, like he's trying to find out for himself if that is a logical fit. He's been in the NBA forever. The college model's changed a lot over the last couple of years. And even he himself wants to know. And look, if there's a place to do it for the alma mater and all this other stuff, yeah, under Bill Self, it makes a lot of
sense. Jerseys hanging on the rafters. I mean, that's unbelievable. So
yeah, I mean, he's probably one of the, I don't know, Kansas got a lot of famous basketball players. 25 biggest? 20? Yeah, what's the number you would say that you don't have to like, no. I don't have to get an argument with
comfortably,
Jayhawk fans?
20. 20? Comfortably. Very, very, very comfortably.
It might be 10, but like, I didn't want to get,
but if you're, if you're a guy in the portal, if you're a high school kid as well, think, I mean, this is a guy that now joins the staff and Jock Vaughn that he coached Kevin Durant. Briefly.
Yeah.
Like he's coached Kyrie. And,
you would think NBA players should like it.
Yeah. Or high school kid that want to get to the NBA should like it.
Kids who were trying to be NBA players should like it.
Yep.
I saw your guy Hunter Dickinson doing LinkedIn ads.
Great commercial.
Doing LinkedIn ads over there on social. Good.
Look, very well done. Very critical of him, obviously, down the stretch of his college career, but unbelievable ad that he put out yesterday for LinkedIn.
For all the haters.
It's very good. It's very good. Well really, done to really Hunter good. Dickinson on that. Look, yes.
We're talking basketball anyway, and we've already talked Drew Shorts. So let's talk a little bit about the NBA last night where this took place.
Halliburton. He'll take it. He'll backpedal a three for the win. And oh! He got it!
We, of course, now know that it was a two, not a three goal. That was the most exciting NBA game of the entire postseason, and the Pacers have been involved in, like, three of them. Dude, if you're a Knicks fan, are you sick? Are you sick to your stomach?
Oh, I think you'd have to be.
Sick to your... At the Garden? Ooh. He did the choke sign again? Yeah. He did the Reggie Miller to you? In your building? For the first time, you've been playoff relevant in what feels like forever. Oh, man, if I was a Knicks fan, dude, I'd be sick. Gold, you said you were happy. You said you were just thrilled.
Yeah, I was thrilled. You know my, look, one, it was just an absolutely incredible basketball game, specifically the comeback in the fourth quarter. And to be able to do that, and Pacers have done it throughout this, but they did it at the Garden, one of the most iconic venues in sports. That atmosphere, Knicks fans were already outside Madison Square Garden, like celebrating, thinking they're going to sweep. I mean, I saw those tweets like, oh, turns out the Knicks didn't just beat up on the Celtics because of Jason Tatum or whatever. You know, people were already sending those tweets out. And then the Pacers come back. Yeah, Halliburton thought he hit the game winner. He does the choke. The choke motion like Reggie Miller did obviously back in the day.
By the way, that was bold knowing that game went to overtime.
Because he thought
could have gone real poor.
He thought it was a three. Yeah, he thought he hit a walk off three. Right, like you know
they had to come through.
Yeah, he thought he did. So that was epic. And yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, I am not a huge fan of East Coast sports teams, and mainly because of their fans. So I will always side, and I like Jalen Brunson. It's not the players. I will always side in this case with a Midwest-ish team, Indiana, over the team out in New York. It's a fan thing. I don't like East Coast arrogance from sports fans. None of these teams have a cop,
but the Knicks are like lovable losers.
I understand. They haven't won anything.
What's the last thing they want? Not that the Pacers or the Wolves or the Thunder have either.
The Knicks haven't won anything in like 52, 53 years or whatever it is. I'm totally with you. And I appreciate the history of the venue they play in and all that. It's just not even as much about the team as it is their fans. Just because you were born on the East Coast doesn't give you the right to be a giant a-hole about your sports teams to everybody else. That's my problem with it.
In particular,
props to the Pacers. Glad they got it done.
I will say the Pacers might be the team.
Drew's over there.
They might be team of destiny, man. You guys have all seen the same stats that everybody else has put out by now, which is just the come from behind stuff.
The absurdity of it.
It doesn't matter whether it's the 0-950 or whatever it was, or the one they sent out last night that since 96, teams have trailed by 7+ in the last 50 seconds of the fourth quarter overtime are 4-1,702, with three of those wins being the Pacers this playoff run. Like, I tell you that stats like that normally mean you eventually do get got. Like, you can't get the Thunder by trying to come from behind 7 points with 50 seconds to go every single game. But there is a team of destiny. It's like the 14 Royals that just got the hit every time you needed a hit. Last night, every time they needed a three.
Neesmith was unconscious.
Neesmith just decided to like hit five threes in 2 minutes a game.
And the Knicks didn't play defense either, which also helped. That was, I thought the Knicks played as good as they could have up until they kind of blew it. They played about as good. Like Halliburton or Brunson had 44.
Cat
had 35 and 13. I mean, they had OG Anunoby playing well. Cam Payne was hitting threes. It was, they played about as good as they could and they still lost. That was thrilling. I wasn't even reacting really until I think I realized it was like a one possession game. It was like, oh, this is a good way to end it. At least they're going to have some momentum going into game two. But for them to pull it off and then having Reggie Miller pointing at Hallie after the shot, it was just an incredible moment. I don't think that's one of the best games I've ever seen. And that's not, I think, putting my bias aside. That's a game that you're probably not going to forget, whether you're a Pacers fan or a Knicks fan or not. Just by how crazy it was.
So we'll see how game two goes here in a couple of nights. Up next, though, we get back to baseball. Jim Callis from MLB Network, MLB Pipeline, going to join us. We'll ask him about Jack Caglione getting called up to AAA. And what does he make of the comp that JJ Piccolo gave him, which is kind of reminds him maybe a little bit of Pete Alonso. That's coming up right here on 96.5.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have the fan. All right, just getting started here on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get into some changes coming to college football's playoff. It looks like they're going to vote on it today. What does this mean for the three locals? We'll dive into that in just a bit. But let's talk some baseball, specifically down to the minor league level. Obviously, everybody in Kansas City locked into what Jack Caglione's already been doing. We know he's now played two games in AAA. To talk a bit more about Cags and also just kind of where the Royal system currently is at as it compares to some of the other teams in Major League Baseball, we welcome in Jim Callis, who is one of the top names when it comes to Major League Baseball draft, prospecting, all of it. He's a senior writer for MLB Pipeline, MLB.com, and he's kind enough to give us some time this morning in Kansas City. Jim, thanks for coming on the show. Cags is kind of just taken over already, and he's only been with the organization for like 11 months, and there's plenty of excitement. There seems to be nothing to temper the excitement there. Let me just start with what you viewed him as when he was drafted last year coming out of Florida, and then what you've already seen him do at a couple levels in the minors.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's, I mean, and this is a good thing. I think he's exactly what the Royals thought they were getting when they took him sixth overall in the draft. I don't think they thought he was going to get there. I think they did benefit. There were seven or eight players who all would have probably been the number one pick in this year's draft if they were available this year. And it was a deep draft at the top last year, and the Royals benefited by having Cags kind of fall in their lap at six. But, I mean, he's exactly what we thought he was. I mean, he's got probably as much usable power as anybody in the minor leagues. He's, you know, shown that so far this year. The only question I think there's two questions about him, and one is minor. The first question is, what position does he play when he gets to Kansas City? Because they have Vinny Pascantino at first. Salvador Perez spends a lot of time at DH. So I think, you know, that's why we're seeing him play the outfield. And you know, is he going to – I think he moves well enough. He's athletic enough to be a decent outfielder. He hasn't played there a lot. But I almost think that's almost the most important part of his development in AAA right now, is getting reps in the outfield. And then, two, the one quibble you'd have with his offensive game – as he chases a lot of pitches. He chased like a Florida. But I remember talking to some scouts where normally that would alarm you. You know, he's so big, he covers so much of the plate and off the plate. You maybe chase matters a little bit less with Jack. And he's still chasing, I think, at a pretty aggressive rate. I think it's around 35% the last time I checked. Maybe it's closer to 33%. And that's still excessive. But he does so much damage, and he doesn't strike. It's not like he's striking out a ton, even with all that chase. He still makes a decent amount of contact, and he's strong enough that he can hit the ball out, even when he doesn't barrel the ball up perfectly. So yeah, we had him on our podcast, on our Pipeline podcast last week, and he said, I mean, that he's discussed it with the organization. That's kind of the focal point of his offensive development, is trying to chase less, but without taking away from him who he is. So there's a long answer for you.
When you look at like major league comps, who, I'll give you who JJ said a minute ago, but like power wise, who's the guy in the pros that like his power most closely relates to or has come up recently that relates to, because we know it's big power.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could put him up there with just about anybody in the big leagues. I mean, I'm not trying to say we're not putting him in the Hall of Fame, but I mean, he's like a slightly bigger version to me. I don't think he's as polished a hitter, but if we're just talking the power, he's like a slightly bigger version of Shohei. And I know I was the one I kind of.
He also pitched, so great.
he did, and it's funny. Like I didn't like the keg. I don't think anybody should be compared to Shohei as a two-way guy. And like, right. I think the Royals also did what was smart. I remember arguing with Greg Amsinger good-naturedly at the MLB Network desk during the draft last year. I would not have had him pitch as a pro either. I mean, it's interesting and intriguing, but his ceiling's so high. I want him devoting 100% of his time to being the best offensive player he could be, because that could be a 40-plus home run guy. But, like, I don't know, just the size and his ability to hammer pitches all over the place out of the park, even if he doesn't square it up, it kind of reminds me of Shohei, to be honest.
We had J.J. Piccolo on our show a couple days ago, and he's like, hey, I'm not saying he's going to be this player, but the comp it reminded him of, or who it reminded him of, was Pete Alonso. That's the name he threw out there.
Yeah, I mean, and that's interesting. Pete's, they're both Florida Gators. I think we're talking offensively, so I get it. I mean, he's obviously a left-handed hitter. I think he's a better hitter than Pete. I mean, I'll go along with the power, but I think he's a better hitter and a better athlete than Pete Alonso. So I guess I'm saying that he's,
wow.
I think he probably winds up being better than Pete Alonso, or at least has, if I had to guess, I would say, and I really like Pete Alonso. I think he's probably going to be a better player than Pete Alonso when all is said and done.
What do you think that the reasonable timeline is of games that you would expect for following prospects to kind of get a handle on right field before he'd be comfortable? They obviously already admitted he's on the earliest end of their timeline just to getting to AAA. The Royals have tried to openly say they're taking their time with him, but like, how many games do you think make sense in AAA to get comfortable in the position, to get more played, get more, reps out there?
Yeah, I think it depends on the guy. I mean, he's buying in, like he buys in, he understands that's probably the quickest way, because rather than move past Contino to DH and move guys around, they aren't getting a ton of production out of a lot of their outfielders. And that's probably the easiest way to get him up there. I don't know that there's a set number. And I think it's one of those things, the better the bat looks, the more forgiving you are with the defense. So if he hits in AAA, like he did in AA, I mean, he spent, essentially, a little more than 5 weeks in AA, and he hit .320 with 9 homers. If he hits like that in AAA, if he hits that well, I have a hard time imagining that he wouldn't be up by the end of June. Because, again, you don't have to play him in the outfield every day. You could occasionally play him at first. The days where Salvador Perez is behind the plate, then you put Pascatino at DH and Cags can play first. You're not asking him to go out and play every day in right field and be a Gold Glover. It might be half and half. And again, I think the bat will dictate when the glove is ready, if that makes sense.
We're talking to Jim Callis, senior writer for MLB Pipeline, MLB.com. Does great work covering the minor leagues, and you obviously see his work around the draft quite a bit. Where's the Royals organization kind of stack up now from their farm system, at least in baseball? We know it was fairly depleted a couple years ago. Where does it stand now?
Yeah, it's on the rise a little bit. We ranked 23rd coming into the season, and I'll be honest, I haven't kept up. Like, those things almost change daily as guys graduate to the big leagues and that type of thing.
Sure.
They're probably around 20th. You obviously have the premier power prospect in baseball in Jack Caglione. They have one of the best tandems of catching prospects around in Blake Mitchell, who's been hurt, and Carter Jensen. I think the key for them is that they'd like to develop some pitching. Ben Cadorna is struggled a little bit. Noah Cameron has looked really good in a couple starts up in Kansas City. So it's not as deep as it once was, but there are some interesting guys. And, the one thing they won't have this year is they won't have the benefit of picking up near the top of the draft. But the thing about this draft is it's the opposite of last year. It's not top heavy at all. And I really don't think the player that they get at 23 is going to be that much different than the guy who might go 10 or 15 spots ahead of that. Plus, they get the bonus pick for Bobby Witt finishing in the top three in MVP voting last year, and because they gave him a full-year service time 2 years ago. So they will have some money to play with, even though they're not picking as high as they used to.
We talk about the Royals organization as one that I used to really complain, Jim, about the way they develop pitching, and I didn't think it was very impressive. Now they've taken a lot of different avenues in the big leagues where they've found some guys they drafted a few years ago, found some guys they've traded for in free agency. Does Major League Baseball, I guess, scouts or teams who look at this, do they value what the Royals do pitching development-wise more than they did in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's constantly evolving. I mean, I think not just the Royals, but if you looked at almost any team, I feel like the knowledge of pitching has increased so much compared to 5 years ago, and then 5 years ago compared to 10 years ago. So I think everybody's doing better. I mean, the tricky thing with pitching is it's like a catch-22. Like, pitchers are so volatile. You know, you used to have, I think it was Baseball Prospectus, have the expression, there's no such thing as pitching prospect. Well, if you take that attitude, that's the best way to never have any pitchers. But you just have to accept that, you're going to take some guys and you might invest in some first-round picks or some second-round picks, and they're not all going to pan out. I mean, it was probably 10 years ago, I think the Royals spent 2 first-round picks on high school pitchers. And Ash Russell and Nolan Watson never really got off the ground. And, you know, Ash Russell developed the yips. And, you know, like, you can't see that coming. And it's just, you know, Chris Bubich, you know, the guy they drafted. They, what, traded for Lorenzen. Noah Cameron was a lower pick. You know, Michael Wacha was a free agent. You know, Seth Lugo was a free agent. You know, you know Cole Reagans was a really astute trade. You just kind of have to, you know, accumulate as much pitching as you can and hope it works out. So to answer your question, yes, I do think the Royals are doing a better job. And I also think, not to make excuses for anybody, that even the best pitching organizations run into a lot of injuries and pitfalls along the way just because that's the nature of pitching. I mean, I think the Dodgers are one of the best organizations in baseball at developing pitching. And look, I mean, what do they have, 14 pitchers on their big league injured list right now? You know, it's just – you need some luck to go along with the skill, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Last one for you. I'll just ask you at the big league level what you're seeing in the American League Central. You know, it's not long ago where everybody thought you get to like 85 wins and you should be good to go. This is 2 years in a row where this Central looks like you're going to have 3 teams, maybe 4, in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I mean, I think if the season ended today, they would get all 3 wild cards, right?
Yeah, believe right. That's right, yeah.
Like they have 4 playoff teams, which I don't think people saw coming. And it's just, you know, I think, you know, whether we're talking about the Royals, you know, the Tigers, very similar, the Guardians, the Twins, all these organizations are kind of, you know, none of them are big budget teams. They're all kind of, you know, mid-level budgets. And they've all done a good job in recent years of developing players and making some astute trades. And it's, you know, I don't know that they're like the juggernauts that say the Phillies and Mets and Braves are, but I do think AL Central is probably the most fun division to watch in baseball because, you know, everybody but the White Sox has a chance to win that division, you know, and if they don't win the division, to make the playoffs. They're all very interesting teams.
Jim Callis, senior writer for MLB Pipeline, MLB.com. Appreciate the insight. Great to have you on the show, and we'll have to have you on here in another month or so around the draft.
Yeah, that would be great. Good talking to you guys.
Absolutely. There you go. Jim Callis, great perspective on the Royals minor league system. Jack Caglione, how about that? So we said, hey, here's what J.J. Piccolo said, Pete Alonso. He's like, oh, okay, I understand that. He's like, I think he might be better than Pete Alonso. So the
everything. He said Shohei Ohtani.
As soon as he said Shohei, I looked at you guys' faces, and you looked at each other like, hang on a second. What did he just say?
Look, the bar is so freaking high for Caglione, and he's done nothing to lower it.
No,
to this point.
No, the possible ceiling on him is very, very high. But could you imagine, like, I mean, I think he's a better overall hitter than Pete Alonso, who's a career 251 hitter with a 343 on base and 235 home runs in just 7 years in Major League Baseball. He hasn't even finished his 7th year. So, like, yeah, I mean, I'd take Pete Alonso's career without question. If you're saying they think he's a better overall hitter, the chase rate is stuff I've heard before. It's really kind of interesting with him because I do think what he's saying is true. The organization can't figure out where he chases like Salvi. And for as many people as I have seen at me on social media, on the text line or whatever, be like, there goes Salvi chasing pitches 4 feet outside the zone. And that's been his entire career. It's who Salvi is. It is part of his plate appearance. It's just who he is. They're trying to decide if they can forgive it because he's so gigantic. His arms are so long. He covers so much of the zone. It's like, can he just chase more than other people and it's fine? If the strikeout numbers are okay. And to be clear, the strikeout numbers are at around 22%, 20% since he started really kind of coming around, which is a number, by the way, that's okay. That might sound high to you. That's an okay number.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, let's see what he does over the next couple of weeks and in a month in AAA as they're out in Salt Lake, and then they'll head back to Omaha, and I think next week. The timeline part you asked about too, Cody, we were everybody always wants to figure out that, and you know, he said, look, if he hits anywhere near what he hit in AAA and he starts that way immediately, he said end of June. He said end of June he thinks he would be up. That's if everything goes great and he doesn't have a rough 2-week stretch to start or anything like that. He continues to have the chase rate down. He hits the way he was hitting the final 2.5, 3 weeks or whatever it was in AA. If he does that, that's where the end of June becomes realistic. That would be end of June. That's best case scenario stuff is what he was, you know.
But what just happened was best case scenario.
Right.
The amount of time he took to get up to AAA was best case scenario.
So far, everything from CAGS has been best case scenario. And again, we've got in the last 72 hours, we've had comps for about Pete Alonso and others. You know, I don't want to compare anybody to Shohei, but we just had someone that who sees plenty of prospects over his, I don't know how long Jim Callis has been doing this.
Yeah,
he's been one of the premier names in that industry for a while. He definitely knows what he's talking about when it comes to seeing young talent in the minors and trying to comp them out to big league talent. That should excite you quite a bit.
I like that. Just the 9-1-3. Okay, I've heard comparisons to Shohei better than Pete Alonso. I'm ordering my CAG shirt today.
Yeah.
If you didn't get a chance to get the ones we did on the road trip, they do sell them at Ray Gun site. Like at their physical Ray Gun at their like physical location, I think in Crossroads and it is hard not to be. I'm trying to temper it below what I was for Bobby because Bobby was all time excitement level. And now I know he is an MVP caliber player, but it's like maybe just a half tick below that. What's the prospect that before this, that the hype was this high?
Hosmer.
That's probably the answer. Hosmer, who ended up being, what, a 10, 12-year big leaguer who won a World Series for this team? And look, he wasn't a perennial all-star who ended up being one of the 15 best players in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
But Hosmer, like, if CAG's floor is Hosmer, they're going to be okay. A 10-year big leaguer with more power than Hosmer? Like, yeah, okay, I'll live if that's his floor. Because that's, I don't know about you, that's kind of what I'm starting to settle into. That anything below Hosmer's career I'm going to view as a disappointment, and that anything above that is what I'm anticipating for his career. I don't know if that's like unfair or not.
I mean, just think about it. You get one of the best rotations, if not the best rotation in baseball, an MVP candidate.
And then Shohei just comes into the
and
roster.
And potentially adding Pete Alonso, and then you have Vinny on top of it. I mean, it's just, it'd be...
Yeah, for
very,
this,
very,
this
very
is why
good.
People are excited also about this year if he gets called up and what can he bring to the world. Long term, obviously the rotation is going to look different next year because you've got guys like Lorenzen that are done contract wise and Lugo's going to probably opt out and things like that. But you're right, like if he comes up in July or August this year or you know that in that window and has any bit of success immediately, what that does to the team, that's a guy that can get you over the hump. You don't bring him in to be the savior. But he gets you over the hump to the next level. You need that push to win the AL Central. He's that type of player. And there's at this point, like, there's no even point in trying to soften expectations when he gets called up because that train has run away a long time ago. Whatever his debut is, hopefully his debut happens to be in Kansas City, right? That'd be very, very cool. Whenever that day happens, whether it's in July, August, or I guess if it's next year, although at this point, nobody's thinking it's going to be next year, anybody you talk to, that moment, we all remember Alex Gordon, bases loaded against Curt Schilling, standing ovation, all of that. He ended up striking out. But we remember that moment.
Yeah, you and I were both at that
game.
It's
going to be the exact same for CAG, except it's going to be on a team that's vying for a playoff spot. Yeah. That's the expectation. It sounds crazy, but that's what people are going to have that same reaction to. I just hope, though, while we can all have the crazy high expectations and you're hearing from the general manager of the team comping him to Alonso, you're hearing from somebody that's been in the baseball world and minor league world.
Yeah, he doesn't have
prospects,
a Royals
Jim
bias.
Callis, talking about him being better than Pete Alonso, perhaps. That kind of stuff is cool. I'm just talking about the immediate, like first week, you know, expecting him to go 4 for 4 and hit 2 home runs. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like anything short of that, people are going to be bummed out the first week.
I think you said next week you're going to go up and watch him in Omaha. Yeah,
Dusty and I are going to head up there. We've kind of solidified it now. I think so. We're going up next Friday and Saturday.
Nice. Two games in Omaha.
Go do 2 games, check out Omaha a little bit, and then obviously watch Cags for a couple games. And it should be a ton of fun. Looking forward to it.
Not a Cody and Gold road trip. Gold is just going up
as
with
a
Dusty.
Normal person.
If you happen to be at the game, I'm sure they're happy to like chat or say, Ray Gunn did tell me that they have it in the Omaha store too. They just went ahead and put the CAG shirts
smart.
There.
Oh, that's
so
very
if
smart.
You're in Omaha and you're like, well, I need my CAG shirt before I go to the game.
There you go.
Problem solved.
Nice. Perfect.
Yeah. But yeah, just a lot of fun. Meanwhile, in college football, my least favorite sport on the planet as time goes on. It's not. Jeez. I'm just like,
Drew's about to run in here and fight you for that comment.
I can't believe it.
I'm doing that sarcastically, but every day they do something in the most oligarch nonsense. We're the Kings. So today,
this makes some sense though.
They are expected to, it doesn't to me, they are expected to put rules in place that will seed the playoffs based off the ranking, not based on being a conference champion. They know it's a bad look, so they will still give teams like Boise State the amount of cash they would receive for being a conference champion. They'd just be rated lower. So the general consensus is everyone got mad that Boise State got a bye. And as a result of that, they want it to go to teams that aren't conference champions or just rated higher. Here's the reason why I hate it, and then I'll hear you out. It once again just favors like the same 8 schools. They cater. Oh, please, Texas. Oh, Alabama. We'll do anything to make you, our overlords, happy. Yes, SEC. Anything you want. And they can't possibly do anything to benefit one other college football program that isn't the King 10. And I just kind of hate that a sport caters to everyone versus look for some ways to allow other teams to have success or to benefit off of that success or get a bye occasionally or get to host a home game. Boise State, off of those rankings, wouldn't even have hosted a game in Boise last year and won their conference. Correct.
Yeah, this change, we all kind of knew it was likely to happen the minute Boise State was hosting a college football playoff game in the first year of the expanded
playoff.
They
didn't host it, though.
Or not host it, but have the bye. Having a bye, which is what we're talking about, the bye, sorry. And the minute that happened, people freaked out. And by people, it's the SEC and the Big Ten in particular.
Yeah, and their fan bases.
They wanted that. The compromise with this is that there still would give the non-Power 5 the $8 million or their conference the $8 million for being one of the top ranked or automatic conference champions. You just are no longer going to get the bye. Here's why I'm not as upset about it as I would have been like 10 years ago. Because, Cody, we just know at this point, man, everything with the college football playoff, every tweak is to benefit the Power Four conferences. Like this has happened so many times. This one almost seems like a small thing. But we know that the future of college football is always, and is as it already has been doing, going to be catered specifically the SEC and Big Ten, but we'll call it the Power Four for now. Eventually, it might only be 2 conferences, that whole thing.
Let's hope
super
not.
Conferences. I hope not, but I still think we're getting there one day. So I'm not surprised by it. It's why I'm not as upset by it. This is the compromise that these other schools and conferences agreed to is, all right, we'll still give you the same money, but yeah, you if you're ranked 8th in our college football committee, then you're getting the 8 spot, basically. You're not getting the 4 spot.
Yeah, I don't like it. Well, why can't small schools get a benefit?
We're
making it possible for like a Cinderella run is not even possible in college football. And it was already a long shot anyway, Drew, but now it's just zeroed.
Yeah, but I in fairness, I think that all the conference champions lost. And all those teams that got byes lost.
Yeah, 1 year sample size and we're just let's tear it up?
No, I understand, but I think that for a school like Boise, because last year they got the bye, they never hosted a game. It wouldn't have mattered. And Boise State put themselves in a position where they could have hosted a game if they'd have been ranked a little bit differently. I think the final college football playoff standings put IU over Boise State, which, I mean...
Yeah, even without a bye, Boise State was not going to be ranked in the spot to go host a game.
I think last year was an outlier because last year Boise State was good enough to be in that conversation inside the top 10. I don't think we're ever going to see at least for this year. It's a long shot for there to be any group of 5 team that is in the top 10 period anyway. So they wouldn't be deserving of a hosting a game
anyway.
You're
saying in most years, the group of five school or whatever we want to call it these
so
days.
So much further down, they don't even deserve to be
Boise State was stacked last year. We obviously know they had one of the top picks
in
the draft.
They were inside the top 10 on a regular
basis. But just in case
there
is a team good enough, you don't get to get in either. Do you see the problem there?
No, you get to get in. You just don't get the bye is what they're saying.
And I think, you know, there's a chance that they host a game. I think if you're Boise State, I would have rather not had the bye and hosted a playoff game.
You said that at the time. I remember you did say that.
And I think that for it would be better for Boise State to have that. Now, for Ohio State, it doesn't matter. But this, it works because I think it provides the quote-unquote fairest matchups where, hey, Boise State has a better shot to win a game against Indiana than they do against Penn State because of just the way that college football is. Like last year, we know it was Ohio State. And it was Ohio State and it was Oregon last year as like the cream of the crop, and then it was everybody else. Boise State, I think if you're Boise State, would you rather win a playoff game and then lose in the same round that you would have been in or get a bye? I would have rather them win if I'm Boise State, I'd rather win a playoff game, whether it's on the road or not.
This is the whole problem. This is the whole slippery slope part of it that like even like Binkley or other people talked about. Well, then at that point, then just get Boise State out. Because the truth is Alabama's got a better chance to win that game than Boise State. So like, why
didn't Alabama didn't deserve to be in?
No, that's the
problem. Boise State was a top 10 team throughout the country last year. Alabama,
but they won
was
their
not.
Conference. So in my opinion, they deserved the spot that they got.
I know,
and like, so like, the deserving thing just comes in like when they feel like doing it. Do you understand? Like, it's just like, oh, when we feel like it, and then we're just like letting people make decisions on where they deserve to be seated, because no matter what. And this happens all the time with these power conferences. Georgia could have four losses and they have a better chance to win based on what you said. So let's just move them up the rankings, right? Let's give them the home game instead. Let's let them play there because they're better than Boise State, even though Boise State won more games or did these other things. Like they'll always do these things. Like my problem is, and this is where I like the NCAA college basketball tournament typically more, although this year's not a good example of it.
Generally,
I like there to at least be a chance. They're making it like the onside kick for college football, where they're making it so hard for anyone outside the little elite club to be a part of it that it's almost impossible for them to ever have a run.
I just think that if you want them to have a chance at winning a game or winning the whole thing, because I can tell you right now, Boise State's never winning a national title in college football. It's never happening, which sucks. Yeah. And I agree just as much as you, Cody. It is a bummer that it's going to be that way, but it's just never going. Kansas State is probably never winning a national title in college football. Sorry to the K-State fans. It's probably never happening. But that doesn't mean that they can't make a run.
Drew B. Nix on Twitter. Yeah, Direct those tweets to him.
But that doesn't mean that K-State can't host a playoff game, win a playoff game, show off for the campus, attract more recruits because of that.
Yeah, and Cody, you like the look of the college football playoff national championship trophy, as we discovered. Cody really loves it.
I ruined that for Drew.
Up next, let's talk more about the Royals, where they could be when they get some of these guys back in the starting rotation. And yesterday, or I guess a few days ago at this point in time, you mentioned regression candidates at quarterback. You mentioned one name. Let's go deeper into that and find out who we think could regress at the QB spot in 2025.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.